This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Sports royalty is on the air. This is the only show with so much talent and expert analysis, it can barely be contained. Jump on now or it'll pass you by. This is Place to Be Nation's Sports Evolution.
Hello, sports fans. Welcome to this week's edition of Sports Evolution here at PlaceToBeNation.com. Special guest this week, special show. We've got a lot going on in the world of sports. I'm your host, the Cowboy, your co-host, Scott, will be joining us for the for segment two, which is going to post a couple of days from now. But for this one, you're stuck with me. I'm joined by two of my favorite guys. First, you know, my dad, Cowboy Senior. How you doing, Cowboy Senior?
I'm doing great, Cowboy. Just enjoying the NBA playoffs, enjoying the ride, getting into this love affair that the city of Boston is having with our overachieving Celtic basketball team.
Always objective, Senior, and you're a good fan, and we love that. And also, join us, we have a special guest. He hasn't been on since the Super Bowl. Friend of the podcast, great guy, a knowledgeable analyst, Rob Carpenter. How you doing, Rob?
Doing pretty good, fellas. How you doing?
Doing fantastic.
So we have sports news to get into.
Oh, man, a lot of sports news to get into. We won't mention that the last time the three of us were together, we all predicted a Carolina romp in the Super Bowl. But I guess that's why they play the games, right, Rob?
We're allowed to be wrong at least once a year.
Yes, yes. Only once. Okay. We'll all take our mulligan. So,
exactly.
You know, it's been a crazy few days here in the world of sports, and we wanted to start things off with a topic that we've touched on a number of times here before, but given the news, probably the biggest news in sports right now, and given my guests and how they're sort of on different sides of the fence for this one, I figured we would start with discussing Mr. Brady. So, for those of you living under a rock, Tom Brady's suspension, which was overturned, was reinstated. Procedurally, the appeals court said that Roger Goodell did not overstep his bounds. The players gave him this right in the collective bargaining agreement. Brady will have to serve his suspension. I'm no legal expert, but all the legal experts that I've heard and read say that this is pretty much game, set, and match. I mean, they, you know, take it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's never going to hear it. That, you know, basically, if the league plays, you know, wants to play hardball and stick by this, that Tom's going to probably have to serve the four games. So that's all I'm going to say about it. I'll sort of leave my opinions on the matter for the end. But I'm going to start with you, Rob. Was justice served?
I don't. In all honesty, I don't think it should have gone this far. Once the NFLPA got involved with the league, me personally, knowing I'm a former member of the NFLPA as a player, I knew they were going to take it this far. They pretty much had Tom Brady pretty much had the deck stacked against him. I mean, I know the initial ruling was that Goodell overstepped his bounds, but then once the appeal was done, you know, I figured that when the reports were coming out about how the appellate judges were kind of grilling the PA, the Players Association union reps. I kind of figured at that point in time, and this was a few months ago, that, yeah, Brady's pretty much a done deal right now. This suspension is going to be reinstated, and you know, there's pretty much not anything he's going to be able to do about it. Knowing him, he probably still wants to fight it, but, I mean, it'd pretty much be wasting time because it's probably going to end up hurting the Patriots in the long run if he actually tries to appeal this decision because if he does – me personally, I think the suspension will be back reinstated during the season. So probably somewhere you know, in the middle of the season, and to start the season one way and then have him sit out, you know, four games probably be detrimental to the team.
Right. So, Rob, we've actually never spoken to someone about this who's been in an NFL locker room. So, not to rehash old things, but what are your personal feelings on what did he know? If you had to guess based on your experience as a player.
Well, me personally, as a player, I know he knew. I mean, that's just it. Quarterbacks are probably the most fickle players that are on the field. And you can ask any player that has been in the locker room about any quarterback. They want things specifically the way they want. And if he wanted low air pressure in the balls, he was going to get low air pressure in the balls. If he's like, you know, there reports about Aaron Rodgers wanted higher air pressure in the balls. He gets higher air pressure in the balls. It's just one of those things. But also on the other end of the stick, me as a player, I wouldn't care. You know what I mean? You talk to most of the players that are around, we don't care about that stuff, man. It's like, okay, all right. He likes lower air pressure. It is what it is. You know what I mean? So you play the game the way it is. If you can't cover Gronk, you can't cover Gronk. It's not going to matter. The ball is, you know, got 30 pounds of pressure in it or 10. So, you know, as a player on that end, yeah. Do I feel like he knew? Absolutely. But in the long run, I don't think for me it would have mattered that, you know, it's a ball, man. It's deflated. So what? And I pretty much think that most of the players that are around the league in locker rooms now probably feel that way, and in the past probably feel that way as well.
So it kind of sounds to me, Rob, like from your perspective as a player, that maybe the punishment didn't quite fit the crime here.
I don't think it did, but in the essence of Brady saying that he didn't know or didn't have anything to do with that, you know, as a player, former player, and other former players, we would know. Yes, you did. You do. And you had a hand in the way that your balls that you actually want to play with were going to be made for you. He was on that panel, I believe it was him and Peyton Manning and a couple other quarterbacks that went to the competition committee to have quarterbacks have their own balls placed in game play. So, you know, that will also give you an inclination right there that he knew. He knew what was going on. They want their balls the way they want them, and that's that, man. But, again, as a former player, we don't care. It is what it is. But in the whole integrity of the game thing, my thing is just like, all right, Tom, you should have just owned up to it. Yeah, you had something to do with it, and the punishment probably wouldn't have been as bad.
Yeah, it's the same point that our colleague here, JT made, was that the best thing that Brady could have done was just, yeah, I did it. What's the big deal? I mean, you gave, you know, pumping crowd noise in, that type of thing. You know, there are punishments for this that are not four-game suspensions, and call it a day. So
exactly.
Senior.
Okay, I'm gonna
your thoughts. Well, I have a question first. So, okay. one of the things that stands out to me as an outside, you know, on the outside looking in, is that I tend to agree with pretty much everything Rob said. Okay, but I think the NFL. I think this has been one of those situations that hasn't helped anybody, because the NFL has just looked awful throughout this, and in my opinion. I mean, even to the point that even though this game, the suspension, they knew that the suspension may be reinstated, they scheduled the Patriots in two primetime games in their first four games. It's like, you know, who's running things over there? So, Senior, in your opinion, what's your take on the situation, kind of from the lens of has the NFL botched this?
Jeepers, you would think so. I mean, it's even though, you know what, you know, the NFL just can't lose. The NFL is so popular right now that no matter what they do, they're still going to be the highest rated sport. The money's going to keep rolling in. You know, that's all I hear about how Goodell is a good commissioner, that the money's rolling in, he's doing a great job. Well, you give anybody that product and they'd be in pretty good shape. It's by far the most popular sport in America. It gets all the TV ratings, and they could botch anything up.
and they'd still be fine. But yeah, I mean, this has been nothing but a negative for both the league and the Patriots. And everybody involved, it's done nothing but a negative. It's taken so much attention away from all the good things that are going on. Maybe part of it, from the NFL's perspective, is it also took some attention away from the concussion thing. You know, there was more to do about the Deflategate than there was about the concussion thing, which is something that probably the NFL is happy to deflect some attention away from. My big thing, I'm going to stay away for the moment. Obviously, I'm biased. I'm a Patriot fan, and this kills me. But I'm going to take the view of a person who is a union person. I'm a member of a union, and Rob says he's a member of the NFLPA. And as a union person, you have to be disgusted that with a collective bargaining agreement that allows one guy to be the prosecutor. Obviously, the guy's Roger Goodell. He's the prosecutor. He's the judge and he's the jury. This decision is saying that Goodell can basically do anything he wants. I mean, as much as I'm not going to stand here and argue with Rob about Brady knew and all that. I mean, I really don't know, but even if he did, whether he did or not, there should be a little bit of burden of proof. I mean, with all the money they spent on the Wells report and the best they could come up with was more likely than not, and more likely than not that Tom was generally aware that something wrong happened, more likely than not that it did happen. With that burden of proof for a minor violation, even if they would have 100% proved it, this guy was able to find the Patriots for, I think, $1 million, take away very, very valuable draft picks. I mean, we don't have a first-round pick this year. And suspend the best player in the NFL for a quarter of the season. And he was able to do that. Man, you got to think, like I look at what I consider probably the strongest union around, the Major League Baseball Players Association. Those guys must look at that and say, what did the NFLPA do? Giving this guy that kind of power, are they crazy? It's gotta really bother them a lot. And, I mean, as a former member of the NFLPA, does that disturb you, Rob?
It does, just like it disturbs pretty much everybody that's involved with it from the player's standpoint. But the one thing that I will say in defense of it, which is not really a great defense of it, is that the work stoppages that could have happened didn't happen, gave that part of the negotiations up to get other things done for former players and actually current players alike with pensions and so forth. So there was something that had to be given up to get things done in a timely manner, because if you guys don't remember, this last collective bargaining agreement went down to the wire before there was about to be a work stoppage. So it looks bad in the sense of when things are done and Roger Goodell has to rule on it, where he is as you said, the prosecutor, the judge, and the jury on every aspect of punishment that's handed down. On the other hand of the stick, you have to look at it like, okay, how many instances are there that really happen where he has to make these decisions? He doesn't make those. He gets blamed for all these decisions when things pop up during games with fines for illegal hits and stuff like that. That's actually not him. He's just, it's just his figure that actually gets all the blame for it. But there are other guys that are in the NFL office that make those rulings. So, but if there was an arbitration hearing on any of those, then he may be the one to make the actual end ruling. He doesn't hear it, but he may make the end ruling. But it's still him. But again, there had to be something that had to be given up, and that was just one of those things. And we know, like, the next collective bargaining agreement, that that's something that's going to be fought for him to be for that power to be taken from him. And yes, as you said, and another union like the MLB union, which is, as you said, probably the most powerful union that is around, they are looking at this this deal like, yeah, those guys are nuts. There's no way we actually went for that. They had actually stopped playing. So baseball is known for actually having, you know, work stoppages. So those guys would have did that.
And I mean, a work stoppage is a terrible thing, but if they force your hand and that's what you have to do, that's what you have to do. And I think before any union would give one person this much power, they would go to whatever extreme they had to.
No for going forward. That, that probably will happen.
So a work stoppage, I mean, Rob, you could probably speak to this. A work stoppage, the NFL is a little different than baseball, right? Just given, one, the size of the rosters, average salary for an average guy, and then kind of the length, the average length of a career. Like a football player, an average football player missing half a season is a lot bigger of a deal financially, right, than a baseball player.
Absolutely, and that's one of the reasons why the guys actually gave that up. So there wasn't a stoppage, because the guys who are maybe in their second or third year aren't making, you know, the top quarterback or top left tackle or defensive end money. So those guys missing 4-5 paychecks, that's detrimental to them. You know what I mean? That's, it's just not like they're out anywhere else where they're getting a paycheck from anywhere else. So that's been their job for, you know, last 2 years, and actually what they're looking forward to. And most of those guys need it. And that's the majority of what the NFL is. So that actually came into play about it. Like, you know what, you know, can the majority of the guys that are in the union afford to miss any time? And most of the guys really, you know, you think about it, really can't afford to do that at this point, when most of those guys are second and third year players.
All right. One last question before we move on. So my opinion at this point is, this has gone on too long. Damage has been done on both sides. To me, it's time to come to an agreement. So I'll ask Rob first, then Senior. Rob, from the perspective of the NFL, and Senior from the perspective of Tom Brady. So if I were Goodell, I would tell Brady, Tom, you don't have to admit to deflating the footballs. Admit to hindering the investigation by destroying your cell phone. I'm going to reduce your suspension to 2 games. We're out of the courts, and this fight's over. Rob, do you do that if you're the NFL? And then Senior, do you do that if you're Brady?
Actually, if I'm the NFL, I don't do that. Because the NFL knows that they actually have the ball in their court now. So it's not like, you know, there's a minute possibility that he may be able to get this suspension stayed or overturned, like very minute. So, and as you said, speaking to most lawyers or guys that actually know this type of situation, the NFL has the upper hand right here. So I don't think they're going to give up, and I don't even think it even would come into play with Goodell, where he would actually even think about saying, all right, we've gone through this whole mockery of a thing all this time, and now we actually have the ball in our court, and we actually have basically won this thing, to go back and say, okay, well, let's negotiate about what the suspension is. I just don't think that would happen. They have the upper hand. They're like, look, this is what we set forth. This is what the courts said that I have the power to do. Why would I change it now?
Right. The only argument for it, right? 100%, Rob. If this thing plays out, it's 99% that he's serving the 4 games. The only argument for it that, you know, that I think of is maybe the court of public opinion has turned a little bit on this one, and Goodell has not been looked on favorably in the court of public opinion, and maybe this would make the league look a little better.
I don't think that is possible. Because, you know, Goodell has taken a beating for years now. It's not just, you know, this thing. This is probably the cherry on top right now of everything that has gone on over the past few years. But it's not a good look for the league regardless. It would probably look even worse if he actually went and said, okay, we went through this all this time. Now let's negotiate. That would probably make the stain even bigger. So I don't think they're going to do anything like that at all. I think Tom and the NFLPA will probably look at their choices, and I actually kind of think they're going to file an appeal, but I don't think it's going to be heard.
It seems that, thank you, Rob, senior. So from the beginning of this, your position has been Tom admits to nothing. Tom wins his innocence. With the deck stacked against him, if that offer came down, which to Rob's point, it probably won't, do you take it?
No. In all honesty. In all honesty, no. And, you know, it's not like Tom's a rookie quarterback or a fourth-year quarterback or whatever. He's a guy who's in the conversation big time as greatest of all time. And I think we have to – We as Patriot fans, for everything he's done for us, I'm totally behind him protecting his legacy. I think us, the Patriot organization, we all owe it to him to allow him to do whatever he has to do to protect his legacy, to take this as far as it goes. And if he loses, better to serve the 4-game suspension than to admit to any guilt at all. Because I think in the long run, when the dust settles, there's going to be a lot of his legacy that's going to, this will be part of it, but there's going to be a lot of it that'll say he got railroaded. Nothing was ever proven. So why admit to anything? They really didn't prove anything. They spent a lot of money trying to prove something, and they, in a normal court of law, what the NFL had would have never held up as far as proof. What's held up is that collective bargaining agreement and the power of the commissioner. That's where the NFL has won. The NFL hasn't really won the case. The other thing is where I'm, and, you know, I know the NFL has the upper hand now, and after the Judge Berman decision, it appeared that Brady had the upper hand, but this is a way of looking at it in all honesty. Right now, a total, Judge Berman and three other judges, four judges have heard this case. And two have ruled each way. I mean, this wasn't a unanimous 3-0 this time. You know, there were three judges that just heard the appeal, and one of them sided against the NFL with the Players Association and Brady. So we're in a tie, so let's go for the tiebreaker, you know? And in all honesty, if I'm Tom, and we say, oh, well, if they suspend him later in the season and it's going to hurt the team, oh, well, he's done enough for the Patriots organization that we owe it to him to allow him to – fight this right to the end, and if he has to serve the suspension, serve it begrudgingly, still proclaiming his innocence. That's the way I see it.
And one last thing, Rob. I see you mentioned legacy. Do you think this has an impact, a real impact on Brady's legacy in the long run?
I don't think so. This would just be right along with, you know, Spygate or anything like that. I don't think this really will stain him. You might get the fandom from the rival areas, New York, Miami, you know, Buffalo, that probably harp on it a little more. But, you know, in the long run, everybody knows Brady's one of the greatest quarterbacks ever played a game. So even that little blip right there. And again, most of the players don't care about the fact that the balls might have been deflated. It's just the fact that, look, dude, you know, we knew that you knew. So you should have just said it. But in the long run, nah, what he's done on the field, man, will overshadow pretty much all of this.
Excellent. Very, very even keeled and respectful discussion, guys. That was fantastic. We're going to move on. So we have NFL draft coming up here very, very shortly. And wanted to just do a kind of a quick discussion of the main storylines heading into the draft. Rob, what's your can you give me your take on both of the big trades? Was it good for St. Louis? Was it good for Philly? Why? I have my own opinions. Senior has his. We could share those, but I wanted to get yours first.
I don't think it was good for Philly. The Rams, I think it's going to help them. They basically have a team where their defense is good enough to keep them in most games. And they really just needed to get over the hump with quarterback, as everybody knows. So in the long run, I actually think this may help them if whoever they pick turns out to be, you know, halfway decent quarterback. Because just think, as the team went last year, they were basically, I believe, 4-2 in the conference. So it's like, okay, these guys won games in their conference, beating, you know, the Cardinals and the Seahawks and the 49ers. So, you know, if they had a quarterback, they could probably improve so much more. So for the Rams, I think it helps them. Now for the Eagles, they're making two moves to get up to this point where they already spent, you know, quite a bit of money on Bradford and Chase Daniel. Now they actually want to trade up twice to get a guy who might have the potential. They don't know which one they're going to get. You know, I think that's real risky for a team like the Eagles right now.
Yeah, to me, it really reeks of desperation from Philly. And it's almost like you would think Chip Kelly was still there. Like, it's the kind of move that he would make. But completely agree with you on St. Louis. They're really a playoff-ready team who, I mean, Case Keenum is an okay backup, but as a starter, he's probably one of the three worst starters in the league. And what better situation for a rookie to come into than having the best young running back in the NFL,
exactly,
in Gurley? And so defense, run the ball, and now you get – this guy doesn't have to be Peyton Manning for them to win games.
No, he could be the Peyton Manning from last year for them to win games, because they have a defense that actually is good enough to keep them in games. They have, as you said, Todd Gurley is one of the best young running backs in the game. So me personally, I would imagine whichever guy they get, Jeff Fisher is probably going to keep them as a run-heavy team if Gurley can stay healthy. And they actually have some decent receivers as well. So the team could actually be, you know, if they get, you know, rookie to play halfway decent, limit turnovers, they could actually be one of those teams that could be in playoff contention, you know, next season. So I could see that happening if they actually get the right guy to fit their system.
Absolutely. Senior, what's your take on the deals?
I just find it really a real interesting commentary on, you know, what the modern NFL is with the quarterback position being more important than it's ever been, quarterback driven league that, you know, and I'm not knocking Jared Goff or Carson Wentz, but you get those rare years where you got a guy like, okay, like when Peyton was being drafted, or Andrew Luck, you got those can't miss guys. Obviously neither one of these guys is this. In fact, a few months ago, you wouldn't even have had them at the top of the draft board, but because they're quarterbacks and teams want quarterbacks so long, so badly, these two teams were willing to give up what they gave up to get to the 1 and 2 position to get one of these guys who basically are both risks. I mean, who knows? And a further interesting commentary to make about it is, quarterback-driven league, this is what it's all about. The team with the great teams with the great quarterbacks win. That's the trend. It's a passing league. I get all that stuff. So you go all out to get two guys that aren't the two best players on the board probably, but they're the two best quarterbacks on the board. You give everything to get them. And we just went through a year where a team went through the playoffs and won the Super Bowl with a quarterback that wasn't playing at a very high level at all. And that's not a knock on the greatness. Peyton Manning's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but he wasn't one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time this year or in that playoff run. He really did nothing special. The team won because of their defense mainly, you know, totally, really. And yet nobody's looking at that and saying, there's another way to win. It's all, well, we gotta give away the farm to go up to get one of these two quarterbacks who really may or may not turn out to be really good NFL quarterbacks. It's kind of interesting.
Especially from Philly's perspective, where you don't even get to pick. So it kind of reminds me of 2011 with Newton. I mean, Newton, you know, you look at, like, Kuiper's rankings, and, you know, any rankings rated him right around, like, the 15th best player in that draft. And Carolina took him number one, and that worked out great. Now, if you look at the top 12 that year, you also had Jake Locker at 8, Blaine Gabbert at 10, and Christian Ponder at 12, also going a lot higher than their rankings would show. And,
Christian Ponder pick still baffles the hell out of everybody.
even Locker. Locker wasn't – I mean, the guy had massive accuracy issues in college. So it just it's a crapshoot. And even a guy like RG3, who was, I mean, maybe not can't miss, but certainly higher, more highly regarded than any of these guys. And he kind of, you know, we can blame the injuries or his personality, whatever. But he's flamed out pretty badly, too. And it's kind of the same situation that the Redskins gave up, mortgage the future for him. So real interesting to see. You can say most likely one of these guys is going to be a stud, most likely. But... you know, I wouldn't want to be the one trying to figure out who. Do you have a strong opinion either way on Goff and Wentz, Rob?
I think right now, most people are saying that Goff is more NFL ready than Wentz. I actually feel different because Wentz actually was a guy who was in a system where that was. I'm not going to say similar to the NFL, but he was actually in a system where he actually was in control of the offense, where he's in control of the huddle. Goff comes from an offense where they had that spread offense, and you know the plays are called from the sidelines while the guys are actually all standing in their position. So it's not like – that's a whole different story when you actually have to get comfortable with, as a quarterback, calling plays, getting familiar where everybody is. And then coming up to the line of scrimmage and reading defense, that's just so much more for a guy to learn than a guy who actually has already done it, where the guy who's done it really just has to get the grips on what's going on the other side of the ball. But you know, just to turn back one quick second, I think the Rams are in a better position, as I said, because of their defense, going back from what Senior said about, you know, the way Peyton was playing this year, and it could be a different way. And that's why the Rams are in the position that they're in, because their defense is so good. They know that that will keep them in games. They just need somebody that will actually be able to manage the game without turning the ball over. And obviously they feel like one of these guys can actually get it done. So they must have both of those guys ranked with the same grade. So really to them, it probably doesn't matter which one they get. So they just got to hope that the one that they do get is the one that turns out to be the one that actually can keep the ball in their hands.
Yeah, great point on the college offense, especially with the Cal guys, right? I mean, there's a long tortured history there of Cal quarterbacks flaming out with, you know, there's one notable exception, of course, but there usually is. So it sounds to me, Rob, especially with the Rams, being honest about it, the Rams are probably set up better to win now than the Eagles anyway. So it sounds to me like if you were the Rams, you would take Wentz.
Yeah, I would. If I was a Rams, I definitely would.
Senior, do you have opinions either way on that?
No, I really don't. I don't have a whole ton of faith that either one of these guys is going to turn out to be special. I don't know. But it seems like the majority of the opinion is that they're going to take Goff. I mean, that's the so-called expert opinions that we're reading, is that they're probably going to take Goff. So Rob's saying they're making a mistake. So it'll be something to watch, Rob.
So, you know, the one other quarterback that could go in the first round, that he's got, you know, there could be some Ponder there. we don't know if he's a first-round talent, but, you know, all the news over the last couple of days is a number of teams looking to maybe trade up to get Paxton Lynch, including your New York Jets, Rob. So the Jets have Bryce Petty as kind of a developmental guy already. What do you think they should do? Do you think it's worth trading up to get Lynch, or do you address needs elsewhere and just, you know, inevitably re-sign Fitzpatrick, which they'll probably do either way?
Personally, I don't think they should trade up to get Lynch. Like everybody knows around here that Fitzpatrick probably has 1, maybe 2 years left to play. But the way the team is set up right now, it's set up for him to be the quarterback, because all the pieces that are on offense
except for a couple of O-line pieces, basically. That's all that's changed. and losing Ivory, but, you know, Jets have some viable running backs already on the staff. So, on the roster, but trying to trade up to get Paxton Lynch, that's like the ultimate crapshoot right there. And, you know, that's something that they should actually just shelf. And I know there's a lot of talk about, trading Muhammad Wilkerson just for that reason. You know, they're going to trade, Mo Wilkerson for anything. It should be something other than Paxton Lynch.
Agreed. And, they brought in Forte. So the team, I mean, the Jets are really set up. I mean, it's a veteran offense, right? And it's,
yep.
I mean, Marshall and Forte and Decker, these are all veterans, particularly Marshall and Forte. They're set up to win now, which doesn't really equate to rookie quarterback who's the third best guy in the draft.
Actually, third best guy is it's you know, questionable if he's actually the third best quarterback in his draft. So, you know, it's going to be interesting on Thursday night, but, you know, for the most part, I just don't think the Jets actually need to trade up to try to get Paxton Lynch. They have, as you said, Bryce Petty is there, as the project. And the time he did get to play during the preseason last year, he actually showed he knows what he's doing. He didn't turn the ball over. He actually made right decisions. And, you know, it just depends on how long, Changeli is actually going to be the offensive coordinator. He looks like he's a fit for that type of offense. So, you know, 2 years from now, it's probably going to be his job to lose.
Senior. So there's a couple of other interests. I don't want to go pick by pick here or anything, but a couple of possible picks, or well, one in particular that stands out. It's the, with the Cowboys sitting at number four.
And I know where you're going.
Cowboys sitting at number four, and they're not, you know, that's a classic case of a team just battered by injuries that is really a playoff team that, you know, if you're going to be bad, you might as well be terrible so that you get the fourth pick in the draft. And Ezekiel Elliott looks like he would make a whole lot of sense for them. What do you think?
Well, there's that whole question of, do you draft any running back that high nowadays? Is he specifically that good to draft that high? And also, where you have some needs on defense and how important the cornerback position is in this day and age, would you be crazy to let Jalen Ramsey go by there to take a running back or a pass rusher like Joey Bosa? I mean, if I'm the Cowboys, I'm probably going with one of those two guys. I'm probably taking the defensive player that's going to help you in the passing game, either as a pass rusher or in the corner. And if I feel like I want to draft a running back, roll the dice and draft one in a later round, where in this day and age you get good running backs in the later rounds. I really like Elliott. You know, I've watched him play a lot. I like him a lot, but I just don't know. At number four, I just think it's too high, especially to let a guy, you know. I mean, I don't know what Rob thinks here. I think Ramsey has a chance to be an elite corner, and I would have trouble bypassing a guy that has the possibility of being an elite corner to take a running back right now. I don't.
Personally,
it would be a Cowboys kind of move. To take Elliott.
As just me in draft scenarios, I just always say take the best player. You know, unless it's a super, super, super need of something that your team desperately needs. And with the Cowboys at four, Ezekiel Elliott is the best player. So they can't go wrong with him. And it's going to help out Tony Romo. It's going to help out Dez Bryant. There's a lot of defensive ends, defensive tackles in this draft. There's not a lot of Ezekiel Elliott. So that's a big deal. If you can get a guy like that to help your team out.
So I'm with Rob here, and I'll give you my reasoning. So if the Cowboys were kind of a, you know, a rebuilding team, a team that wasn't very good, then I think Senior's point makes a lot of sense. The Cowboys are a playoff team, and the Cowboys have the best offensive line in football. And say what you want about rookie running backs, but the one thing about rookie running backs is that they come in. It is, Rob, you can speak to this better than us, but I'd say generally, as a general rule, the running back position at the NFL level is probably the easiest adjustment, right? Because, you know, essentially these guys, they, you know, fresh legs, and you see, you know, they sometimes will flame out, you know, the shelf life's not high, but there's no question, at least in my mind, that Ezekiel Elliott will come in and from day one, from snap one, make them a better team right now. And this is a team with Super Bowl aspirations. So maybe Jalen Ramsey is better 4 years from now, right? Maybe he's that shutdown corner that we all covet. But Tony Romo's not getting any younger. Dez isn't getting any younger. That line's not going to be together forever. He gives them their best chance to win now.
That's pretty much exactly right. When you have a guy like that at the running back position, pretty much every scout, every GM knows the one flaw in most rookie running backs are the fact that they have trouble when they're in their rookie year picking up pass protection. Elliott is that guy that every GM and every scout will say doesn't have that problem, along with all of the other intangibles that he has as positives. The pass protection aspect is something that he's actually really good at. So, yeah, he can step onto the field first day as a rookie, and he's going to make a huge impact for that, for whatever team gets him.
It's a great point, Robbie. And you look at a guy like T.J. Yeldon last year, who that they said the same thing about. I mean, he's not certainly not as talented as Elliott, but he was able to stay on the field for three downs because he could pass protect. And right. If you have a three down back that's got Elliott's talent, I mean, I feel like he could be the guy to put them over the top right now.
For me, I'm not a Cowboys fan. I'm actually a Cowboy hater.
Same here, buddy.
If they picked Elliott, I'd be like, oh, man. That really just put them right there at the top of the list right there.
All right, so it should be.
So I hope they do a Cowboy move. And I end up picking Joey Bosa or something like that and not Elliott. Hope Jerry Jones pulls a Jerry Jones and just goes way off key and picks somebody way out in left field. Uh-huh. And they stay away from Elliott so he can go somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, the last time they took a cornerback in the top five, it was Maurice Claiborne. So he could show Ramsey the ropes, you know, teach him a thing or two, right?
True.
Oh, good stuff. So yeah, cannot wait. Cannot wait for the draft, and we'll definitely be back on here to discuss what happened. Last thing we want to get to in this segment is NBA playoffs. So we're taping this on Tuesday night, the night after the poor LA Clippers season came to a disastrous end. So what a it's been an exciting playoff so far, and I think it's just going to get better. Now, if you're a Clippers fan or someone who follows that team, talk about a range of emotions. You go from, in like a three-day period, go from all we have to do is beat Portland and we're going to get Golden State without Steph Curry to the season's done. I mean, I don't see any way they can beat Portland without Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. They'll probably lose the next two games and that'll be that. But it's just disastrous for them. Rob, you want us to speak to the Clippers?
Well, I think it was like I think they had maybe a 24-hour period where they were really excited. And then it went to total disaster. The Clippers basically have been building this year to get to the point where they should have been last year, which was playing the Warriors in the conference finals. And, you know, up until last night, it looked like they may have – well, they were going to get their shot back at the Warriors to play Spurs in the conference finals. So things couldn't have turned out any worse in a 24-hour period where you go from the ultimate high of highs to, as probably fans of the Clippers, to the ultimate low of lows, where you know basically your season is basically just shut down right now.
So, senior, from the Warriors' perspective, they're going to be assuming that they can take care of Houston, which they've proven they can beat. Houston's a whole other story. I could do a whole podcast about that team and how all that talent and that just wasted, just the worst body language I've ever seen on a team, and they don't play defense, and it's ridiculous. But anyway. So assuming the Warriors get by Houston without Curry, which they should, they're most likely looking at Portland in round two, most likely without Curry. What do you see in that series, senior?
Yeah, I think they again, it, you know, the fact of what happened to the Clippers, if you're a Golden State fan, and I'm it's hard to feel good about anything right now for them, but honestly, what happened to the Clippers last night, the optimistic view is we probably wouldn't have beaten the Clippers without Steph. We probably have a chance against, at least a fighting chance, to get by Portland without Steph. Yeah, I think it'll be a real competitive series. Certainly Golden State has a chance. Buying in this would buy them some time to get Steph back on the court, and then you hope that he could pull some kind of a miracle and get into shape and be himself as quickly as possible, because you're going to be playing San Antonio. I mean, I think the odds are, you know, the team, when the playoffs started, I think it would have been a pretty big upset for anybody to beat Golden State. Obviously, you looked and you said San Antonio has the best chance, but man, when they play each other, Golden State just seems to match up really well against San Antonio. But without Steph Curry, or with a banged up Steph Curry, is a whole different ball game. So the advantage San Antonio, if it comes to that, if they can get by Portland. But with what happened last night, now as a Golden State fan, you would feel like, okay, we have the possibilities there, the possibility that we could squeak by. The possibility that Steph comes back after a couple of weeks and gets himself to the point where maybe we can win a series against San Antonio. But basically, when Steph went down with this knee, all of a sudden, San Antonio and the San Antonio-Cleveland final is what was in everybody's mind, and it breathed new life into both of those teams. I don't think either one of them could have beaten Golden State at full strength. But now I think it gives either one of them a chance to win the championship.
And so we keep saying San Antonio, San Antonio, San Antonio. It speaks to how good San Antonio is that we just assume they're gonna walk over a team that has two of the best five players in the NBA. Rob, do you give the Thunder any shot at all in that series? And if they are going to beat them, how would they beat them?
I really don't give them a shot. Against the Spurs. You know, the Spurs aren't going to lose any of their home games. The best scenario that Oklahoma City can wish for is, the way the playoffs are trending is that one of their top guys goes down with a nagging injury. I think that's the only way Oklahoma City actually has a chance to get past the Spurs in this series. The Spurs are just one of those teams where this year, that's the only thing that probably could derail them is, you know, significant injuries to, say, Kawhi Leonard or Aldridge or even Tony Parker. But, you know, the way that team plays, they're like a well-oiled machine, and, you know, they play well on both ends of the court. And, you know, they just basically beat a team probably 4 or 6 points per quarter, and then you actually end up looking at the end of the game and they've won by 20. So, and you're still trying to figure out how they did it. you know, at the end of the game, like this game seemed like it was really close just like 5 minutes ago. But what happened? And they've done it in the playoffs. They've done it all year. But Oklahoma City is just going to have, if any chance, they're going to have extraordinary games from Westbrook and KD.
Yeah, so I think that there is – I don't think it's going to happen. But I think there is a path to victory for Oklahoma City. I think Oklahoma City matches up better to San Antonio than they do to a full-strength Golden State. So the way Oklahoma City plays is, you know, they want to get out and run. They want to outscore you. And you can't beat Golden State like that. They just they're probably the best team in NBA history at that style. San Antonio beats you a lot differently, and you alluded to this, Rob. San Antonio is defense, defense, defense. I mean, they beat Golden State a few weeks ago, and it was 82-79, right? they held that team under 80. But when a team's defensive minded like that, and the other team has those two guys, so those two guys are both capable of having games where it doesn't matter how good the defense is. You know, Kevin Durant is 7 feet tall and can get his shot off against anybody, right? And if he's, you know, you can play perfect defense on him and he can score 45. And Westbrook is an otherworldly talent in his own right. Westbrook's the key to the series for them because San Antonio plays the type of defense that's going to frustrate him. And we've seen him in the playoffs before where a frustrated Westbrook can, you know, almost take away as much as he gives. But I do see in the realm of possibility a scenario where Oklahoma State could just come out and outscore them for four games. I think it's possible. I don't think it's likely, but I think it's possible. More than likely, though, San Antonio is moving on. And I think, Rob, you alluded to this off air, that the Steph Curry injury really sets up well for them. And why don't you talk about, even though you know, the conventional wisdom is that he would be back for the conference final should they make it, you know, what are the drawbacks for him?
Well, the biggest drawback for him is going to be when he does come back, he's probably not going to be in shape. So, you know, he's going to lose a lot of his conditioning because he can't, at this point, he can't do any maneuvering ability on his knee. He's basically going to be stationary, you know, for 2 weeks. So even if he's, you know, only out for the 2 weeks where those 2 weeks he's not able to practice, and they're trying to bring him back within that period of time, when he does come back, he's going to be out of shape. So that's going to throw off his timing. And if he's actually headed to the conference finals against the Spurs, you know, that's one of their biggest things where, you know, they're a big distraction when they're playing defense. We witnessed that, you know, a few weeks ago before the end of the season when they actually did, as you alluded to, saying that, you know, they held them to 79 points. And, you know, that was one of the worst games that Steph Curry played, you know, all season. So, you know, they have the guys who can put the pressure on him and keep him off his game. Especially if they take a guy like Kawhi Leonard and play him on Curry all game. You know, that's one of the things that actually I think threw him off. And, you know, they had the capability of doing that. So, you know, it's going to be tough for him if that's the time when he's coming back, because, you know, his condition is going to be off and his timing is going to be off. He hadn't practiced. And just to get back into a rhythm is going to take a little while.
Yeah, and I think – you know, when you really look at that matchup, senior, for the Warriors to beat the Spurs, Curry versus Parker is the matchup that the Warriors completely dominate, right? Curry is light years better than Parker. And the one thing the Spurs do that no other team in the league can do is the Spurs have the one guy in the league who's a better version of Draymond Green and Kawhi Leonard. I mean, they're very, very similar players. But Kawhi's better. And I mean, Draymond Green is a force and a great player. But with Curry at not 100%, that makes Green have to do more facilitating and more, you know, step up and be more the man. And the Spurs have a guy on the other side who does the same things, but just does them a little bit better. What do you think?
Yeah, I think with Curry substantially less than 100%, I don't see them beating the Spurs. I don't even see it being a long series. You're talking about the guy that really makes them go. You're talking about the league MVP, the biggest reason that they're where they are. I'm not saying they're not a good team without him, but not good enough to beat the Spurs. I think they're going to have their hands full with Portland. I think that's going to be a tough series. And obviously they got to do that without Steph. So no, if Steph doesn't come back and, like I said, perform some kind of a miracle and be close to 100%, I don't see them beating San Antonio. However, if some miracle happens and he is 100%, I do see them beating San Antonio. I think it simply comes down to that. That's if they play each other. It's really, unless somebody else goes down, these are all kind of things you can't even predict, you know. But basically, the two teams as they are right now, it's all about how much Curry has if he comes back.
Now we go to looking at the East. It really, I mean, it's been this way all year, and it kind of looks this way now, where it's Cleveland and everybody else. So, hot off the presses, Toronto. Toronto came back and beat Indiana. They were losing the whole game. Paul George stood on his head, but you know, the fact that they're having so much trouble with Indiana, who is essentially a one man team. I mean, really doesn't bode well for the Raptors. I think the Raptors could be in trouble in the second round against either if they're able to close them out, which, you know, they're up 3-2. If the Raptors make it through, I think they could be in trouble in the second round against either the Heat or the Hornets. I would give either one of those teams a good chance to beat them. LeBron and the Cavs did what they're supposed to do. They came out and they swept. So now they get to rest while Boston and Atlanta beat up on each other, which is looking like a seven-game series. Rob, any scenario where outside of catastrophic injury where Cleveland's not coming out of the East?
I don't think so. Even with the fact that they've had trouble with the Heat, you know, it's not an assurity right now that the Heat are going to get past Charlotte. Especially the way these last couple of games have gone on. But I was actually going to pop in with the breaking news of Toronto beating the Pacers as we were on, where that three-pointer at the buzzer didn't count to send the game into OT. But, you know, Toronto's not that team, in my opinion, to give Cleveland a real hard run. The only team right now I think that's left that probably could do it is Miami, but for some reason Miami has looked really sluggish in these last two games against Charlotte. Granted, they've been on the road, but they've had some pretty big leads that they've actually let go of. Even the last game of the season, if I'm not mistaken, it was the last game of the season where they were actually playing Boston. And they had a big lead against Boston, and Boston came back and actually won. So Miami's actually been looking a little vulnerable right now. But prior to that, if there was going to be a team that I'd said would probably give Cleveland a problem, it would be them. But as these playoffs are going along, I just don't see it. Even though Cleveland had issues with Detroit, they ended up finding a way to close out each game and actually getting the sweep. So, you know, they're at home resting right now. And I just don't see any scenario where any of those guys, any other team can actually give them, you know, a push to anything past six games.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, the thing I've been saying all year is I really wanted to see the Spurs and the Warriors and the Cavs play again in the finals, because nobody was giving Cleveland a chance. But last year, Cleveland took two games from them without Love and Irving, right? With Dellavedova, I mean, basically LeBron playing hero ball. And with those two guys healthy, I mean, I really think they could give them a series, even if the Warriors are at full strength. Alas, we may not get that. Senior, why don't you talk about the Celtics a little bit?
Okay, first I'm just going to throw one thing in about that, what you just said. I mean, you weren't on. You were on vacation when we did a couple of weeks ago. I did a podcast with Scott and the PTBN's and quote NBA expert Grant. And I posed that to him because he was basically saying nobody's going to get in Golden State's way. And he was completely writing off Cleveland with the problems they've had this year. And I posed what you just said. I can't get out of my mind that the two teams are the same teams. And without Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, they took them to six games last year. And his response to that, and man, he really made a strong case, and it's an interesting take, was that Cleveland would have a better chance without those two guys, because as good as they are offensively, they're both so bad defensively. And Golden State at 100% with Steph, now not talking about this situation now, which didn't exist, is a team that takes advantage of other teams' defensive deficiencies and finds bad defensive players and just totally destroys them better than any other team in the league. And he said with those two guys, it would be a sweep because Golden State would just exploit Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving's poor defense.
I have a great response to that.
It's an interesting take. That's a take he took. Okay.
I've
got a great response to that as well.
I very much disagree with that take.
I'm telling you what his take was, and it's an interesting take, but I didn't completely agree with it either, obviously. You know, you got two of the most talented guys in the league there. I mean,
no, but the thing
you
is,
can't be a better team without them.
The thing is, we should talk about that. So the thing is, so in a vacuum, yes, they're not very good defensive players. But if you remember the series last year, they had to play friggin' Dellavedova 45 minutes a game. And the guy, I mean, he was getting oxygen after game three. Remember how much he died and the whole team died because they were so, you know, their bench was so thin. They were playing six guys. So how can it hurt Cleveland? Maybe they play Dellavedova a little bit more than they normally would because he gives Curry problems, and they give him 20 minutes a game instead of 15. How does having Irving and Love hurt Cleveland in that scenario? It doesn't. Rob, you can say the same thing or whatever.
It doesn't hurt them at all. It helps them tremendously to have Kyrie and Kevin Love in the lineup because, if you remember the way the series was, as you said, it was basically six guys that they had in rotation, six or seven, and the only scoring was coming from LeBron. So the first game when Kyrie was actually there, they didn't have Kevin Love, but Kyrie was actually there, he was giving them a scoring punch, and Cleveland was actually winning the game. And then when he got hurt, he hurt himself and just before or just after he had blocked a Steph Curry shot to keep Cleveland in lead. So, you know, if they have another proven scorer down in the block, that's going to put pressure on Golden State. Golden State had no pressure on them from anyone else last year except for LeBron as far as the scoring goes. They weren't worried about J.R. Smith. They weren't worried about Shumpert. And weren't worried about Dellavedova scoring. All basically he was in the game for was to try to just pester Curry. So they had no threats of anybody else scoring anywhere on the court. So if it wasn't for LeBron being in the post or trying to shoot jump shots, that was it. And those guys actually just got worn out as the series went on. So, you know, for me, that's a crazy hot take on that scenario with Kyrie and Kevin Love making the team worse off against the Warriors. No way.
And if you remember, I mean, even LeBron broke down. I mean, by the end of that series, I mean, it's just they're playing inhuman minutes, and you know, it's the NBA. The NBA, they have a coach, and if they're getting killed defensively with Love and Irving out there, you can play both guys 35 minutes and only have them on the court together for 15. Do you know what I mean? Yep. Like, it's I don't know. That was senior. I was on a podcast as well with that with Graham, and we went at it a little bit on that one. But back to you, senior, on the Celtics.
Right. Yeah, this is probably what I've been waiting for all night to talk about. They're probably not as much a national story as they are around here. Obviously, you know, nobody's considering the Celtics a contender to go all the way. But from a fan's perspective, from being here, it has been an absolute joy watching these guys. I'm so proud of them. The future is so bright. At the moment, they're ahead 20-15 in the first quarter of Game 5. They're the team in this series. They're playing a seasoned Atlanta team, who you could say is also that has that, quote, combination of three stars with Teague, Horford, and Millsap, and the young upstart Celtics, who are supposedly a team without a star, but they have the guy that's leading the guy who's listed at 5'9", who's really 5'7", who's leading the playoffs in scoring. So I think they do have one star. But anyway, what they've done has been remarkable. They're the team that suffered the injuries in this series. I mean, I think if Avery Bradley doesn't go down in Game 2, where they came from way behind to take the lead, led by him, he was playing fabulous, then they end up losing that game by 1 point with him out. I think he doesn't go down in that game. They win that game, and they're up 3-1 now and looking to close these guys out. Probably a broken Atlanta's spirit by now. They play so hard. They play so much as a team. They have so many good pieces. Whatever they're getting now, however far they go, if they win this series and play Cleveland, it's gravy. It's great. The future is so bright. You know, I can see them diving into free agency in this offseason. They've got room for two max contracts. Where they're going to go with that, we don't know. They have that Nets pick, which is number 3 in the ping pong balls. Thank you, Nets. They have that Nets pick next year, which is probably going to be carrying a lot of ping pong balls. In my mind, they have I would sound like a Yahoo if I say the best coach in the NBA, but I'm going to say one of the best coaches in the NBA, okay? I love Brad Stevens. I just love everything about this team and these playoffs. That last game was unbelievable. That Game 4 was just so much fun to watch, so much drama back and forth, and they got down by 16 in the third quarter, and they didn't even blink. They never do. They have so much fight in them. I know I'm gushing here, but I can't help it. I mean, I love this team as much as I loved our old championship Celtics teams. It's just a blast. It's so much fun being a fan of this team and watching them every night. And the future's bright. The Celts are coming back into prominence, and it's a great feeling. And it'd be nice to win this series too. If they can win tonight, I see them coming home and finishing them off in 6. That would be awesome.
You bring the passion, senior, and I agree. This is a great young team. Ainge has done a fantastic job of stockpiling those assets. One thing in this series that we've seen is Marcus Smart grow up even more. I mean, he is just a kid. I think he's only 21 or 22. And I mean, he's one of those playoff guys. You can tell he's the kind of guy you want on your team. So love him.
Can I interject? I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm going to anyway. You bringing up Marcus, it's just an amazing stat from that hotly contested Game 4 where Millsap was completely out of control, scored 45 points. Nobody could stop him. At the end of the game, we put a guard on him. We put Marcus Smart on him, and he's posting Marcus up. Against Marcus, he was 1-for-5 from the field when Marcus was primarily guarding him, which is just unbelievable. And the other three players that Marcus primarily guarded that night didn't make a shot. And on the other end, Marcus is drilling big threes where he's not a great shooter, but when we really needed him, when the lights were shining brightest, he was unbelievable. So, yeah. Okay, just piggybacking on your praise of Marcus, Roger.
Thanks, senior. All right. So before we close out, guys, let's get some predictions. Finals and champion. We'll start with you, Rob.
Just my prediction. I think the finals are going to be Cleveland and the Spurs. And I think the Spurs actually take the championship this year.
Senior.
I totally agree. I mean, it's easy to do, but yeah, I totally agree with Rob. Cleveland, Spurs. Spurs win the series, I'm going to say in 6. San Antonio in 6 over Cleveland.
I've got the same finals, but I think Cleveland's going to do it. I think LeBron's going to get one for Cleveland finally. I think this is the year. They've, you know, it's crazy, but to me they've like kind of flown under the radar because of how good Golden State and San Antonio have been, and I think, you know, they're healthy, and you know, Curry's a different kind of player, but LeBron is still the greatest force in the NBA, and if I could. if I could have one guy for one game, he would still be the guy. So I'm going to pick Cleveland in seven. So good stuff, guys. Rob, thanks so much for coming on. We will we'll be in touch. We'll definitely have you on again. I hope the Jets don't trade up for that guy.
And we all hope that.
Seeing you as always, bringing the passion, much appreciated.
It'd be okay with me if the Jets traded up for that guy.
No, it's a little cheap shot right at the bell, right after the bell. Huh? No good. All right, guys. So for Robin Senior, I'm the Cowboy. Hope you enjoyed the hour. I know I did, and we'll be back.
Yes, I made an impression on somebody north of Hesser and south of you know.